Welcome into episode 368 of the Wrestling Brethren podcast. Tonight is wrestling news and a review of AEW Dynamite from January 10th. With me tonight are Seth Zillman and Jared Aubrey. Fellas, how the hell are you?
Well, we are preparing for another influx of snow where you can act like we all live on the ice planet Hoth again. And people are complaining about it online, like this doesn't happen every single year where we live. But other than that, everything's great.
Some of the favorite times I have on this show are when I come in completely unprepared and with zero knowledge of what's happened in the past few days. It's like time has not existed. So guess what I'm doing tonight? This should be fun.
At least you know the people involved.
Well, yeah.
So you can make some generalities.
Like the ring general?
Yeah, the ring general. I think that maybe that's where my mind went. I don't know.
Subconscious, right?
Right. All right. Well, wrestling news. Thank God, since this new format has started, the wrestling world, unlike 12 months ago, has not gone batshit crazy, and there hasn't been a lot to talk about. And it's amazing how much this changes when you're doing a show every 2 days instead of every 7 days. So in continuing with the theme of the week, TNA Wrestling reveals two more title belts, and it's the new World title and the new Knockouts World title. These designs have been awesome, aside from what we keep saying, that weird font choice for the words Total Nonstop Action. But I did share the photos with you guys. What do you guys think?
They do look pretty good. I mean, I do kind of consider myself a bit of a belt mark, so I like cool looking belts. They almost look to be like an amalgamation of the past belts put together. Kind of like how the current WWE title of Seth Rollins has. Seems like a cross between the big gold and the winged eagle. So overall, I like them. I think it's what the, I think it was the X Division title that where the strap is red instead of black. That's just a personal preference for me. I prefer either a black or a white strap on the belt. But yeah, other than that, I think the design looks just fine.
Yeah, the tag titles are the red straps.
Okay.
But they're designed from the same company that designed them the last go around, and they have intentionally said that they've used past designs to inspire them for these designs. So you're spot on right there.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's pretty much second verse, same as the first, right? I think the belt designs are actually really good. And I forget which one you showed us. Was it yesterday? It had kind of the huge, like the main plate would go like way up towards a person's chest. I forget which one it was. I thought it was an amazing design, but that font though, it just ruins everything for me. It just looks so out of place.
Seth may be a belt mark, but I'm a font snob. So
that was the first thing I noticed
right
before I looked at the rest of the belt was, oh, that
stands
font.
Out.
Ouch. Yikes.
Yeah. No, yesterday's was the men's world title. And I think the women's title is the same shape, just a smaller version. Kind of like the WWE.
Yeah. Oh, love the plates. Really like the designs and how, especially the men's title, how big it is. It's like here's our championship. Like, voila, this is huge. That font, ouch.
Yeah. And I am a fan of five plate belts. So that's good choices there. Okay, and the only other newsworthy item is CJ Perry. If you remember, in our predictions episode, I said it was likely that she wouldn't be at the pay-per-view because she had an infection. And it was a staph infection. And lo and behold, she showed up, had her finger not really tightly covered a little bit. Well, she posted a couple of days ago that she's back in the hospital, and I went and checked for any updates before we went on the air here, and she posted on Instagram 15 hours ago, Karma is purring in my lap, but worth it to make sure Andrade was sent off properly at World's End. Second surgery next week. Draining MRSA daily. Flesh and scabs cut out of my finger again today. Antibiotics again. Possible full-blown second surgery next week. But I would risk it all again for my ex-clients, future clients, and current clients. So, speedy recovery to CJ Perry, but she should not have been at that pay-per-view.
Yeah, I've heard how staffs can be a really hard to deal with. You know, it can be a real bear. So, all the best to her. Hopefully, speedy, painless recovery.
Yeah, for sure. It's that sounds like it's so nasty, and the pictures certainly don't help. So, yeah, absolutely. All the best. Get well soon. And yes, she should not have been at the pay-per-view, but I'm kind of glad she was, just to make that part of the story work and explain things. But yeah, go rest. Go be well.
For sure. But speaking of AEW and people in AEW, we have another edition of AEW Dynamite to cover. And this one is AEW Dynamite Homecoming, because it took place at Daly's Place. I don't even know if I should call it an arena. The space that's adjacent to the Jaguars' home stadium in Jacksonville, Florida. Tony's dad owns all of that stuff, so they were able to use it. That was their home base during the pandemic when they weren't filming at QT Marshall's school or house or whatever it was in Atlanta, Georgia. They were using Daly's Place. So they returned back here to Jacksonville, and the show kicked off with Hangman Adam Page defeating Claudio Castagnoli, but it took two buckshot lariats to get the job done. Up next was a video package on Brody Lee's short AEW run. That all took place in the Daly's Place. And unfortunately, he did pass away before wrestling got back to shows in front of live audiences. So they had 2 8-person tag matches. They had an 8-man tag and an 8-woman tag that we'll get to in a little bit. Both of these are basically vehicles to remember Brody and get 2 people over who he had deemed his proteges. So in the men's one, that would have been Preston Vance. And the babyface side, team one, Orange Cassidy, Dustin Rhodes, Adam Copeland, and Preston Vance, defeated Lance Archer, Brian Cage, and the Gates of Agony. Adam Copeland did hit a spear, and then Preston Vance finished it off with a discus clothesline, which was one of Brody's signature moves that everybody knows. There was a backstage segment with Bullet Club Gold and the Acclaimed and Daddy Ash show up again. Bowens proposes once again that they join forces against the Undisputed Kingdom and become the super faction. He proposes the name of the Bang Bang Scissors Gang. Once again, Jay White and Colton are not entirely sold. Austin still thinks it's a good idea, as you could see him counting on his fingers to determine that 6 versus 4 or 5 or whatever it is in their favor. Then we had a segment in the ring with AEW World Champion Samoa Joe comes out with the brand new AEW title. Looks very reminiscent of the OG title, except on the side plates, they have little bitty circles for personalization plates, and he has his Samoa Joe logo plates on each side. Gone is the Burberry strap. It's a black strap again, and no, the version that was floating around online with the black background AEW logo was not on this belt, and it was just the original design for the most part. Joe basically comes out and says that as new world champion, he's going to change things around here. He's going to change the way that people go about getting title opportunities. if you want an opportunity, you do not, and I don't know if this was a dig at WWE or whatever, but you do not come out and just declare yourself for a title match. You have to prove yourself in your win-loss record. You go to the championship committee. You submit your name. And if they deem you worthy, then he'll be happy to whoop your ass. So then
I do kind of find it kind of funny that he was using opportunity, which is the word WWE uses. Maybe it's force of habit, but almost nobody uses the term shot anymore, title shot.
Yeah. That's how he was trained in the black and gold. No, I'm just kidding.
Can we step back for 1 second?
Sure.
Distracted for 2 seconds, and then you guys were talking. I didn't want to jump in. But the Bang Bang Scissor Gang?
Mm-hmm.
Really?
That sounds like something that there's a certain subgenre for.
I think I saw a video about that once.
I think that might be why Jay White wasn't too thrilled with that. Oh, yeah. Speaking of that segment again, I forgot and I didn't have it in my notes. At the beginning, when it was just Renee interviewing the Bullet Club Gold, the Guns were talking about something, and as they faded in, and Renee, I forget the verbiage, but Renee said something, and the Guns like, "Don't say that about Jay. You know, he's from the United Kingdom." And Renee's like, "Jay's from New Zealand." And Jay's just like, "Just go with whatever they're talking about." He's like a disappointed dad, just like giving up at the end of the day. He's just like, whatever, just keep going. But it was hilarious that the Guns didn't know where Jay was from. So the segment with Joe, he's saying how challengers cannot just come out. And then what happens?
And what happens? Yep.
Challenger comes out. So we're off to a great start. that challenger was Swerve Strickland. He comes out with the entire Mogul Embassy. And I was watching them come to the ring, and I'm like, are they really going to attack Joe and make him babyface by proxy? I know the crowd already loves him, but I'm like, Joe's the heel. Why is this 5-on-1? Swerve basically says it's nothing personal. It's professional. He's just here to take his title, like he took Hangman's spot. And he did the magic thing of saying somebody else's name, and Hangman Adam Page came out.
Music hits. And yep. Yeah.
This had WWE all over it.
I was going to say a similar thing.
Yeah. So Hangman comes out. He stares down Swerve. They get into it a little bit. Swerve leaves. Then Hangman goes over to Joe. "What are you smirking at?" And blah, blah, blah. And they go toe to toe. And then Hangman leaves. And Joe goes to hold his title high up in the air. And then the third theme song to interrupt him is that of Hook. So Hook on Rampage, Collision, I forget which, had called out Samoa Joe and said he was coming for his world title with his record of 28-1. So Hook comes out, they go nose to nose, and Hook says, one week, and he leaves. And later on, we find out that it is happening next week, Hook versus Samoa Joe for the AEW world title.
And it seems Hook has a Hook signal now. You know how Batman has the bat signal?
So that was, I guess, so weird. Just,
you need Hook to show up, just put up the Hook signal.
Yep.
What?
Yeah, Joe actually looked up to the rafters, and there was a circle with the Hook logo in it.
Oh, love of Pete.
I would go off on the similarities between the whole Hook thing and everything Tony Khan brought up, but we don't have that much time left in this episode for me to go on that rant. So I'm just going to keep going. Backstage interview with Renee, Tony Storm, Luther, and Mariah May. Mariah asks Tony, "Did you see my debut last week?" And Tony goes, "You know, darling, I was given a screener, but I didn't watch one single frame of it." And Mariah goes, "Actually, I wasn't talking about my debut. I was talking about the debut of Deonna Purrazzo, who interrupted and kicked me and said she's going after you." And it was hilarious. Tony goes, "That name's familiar. Sounds Italian." And then Renee says something to move the segment along a little bit. And Tony goes, Luther, get me footage of this Diana Parazzo lady or whatever. She like tries to put an Italian accent on it. It was so funny. This Tony Storm character is gold, I tell you.
Frigile must be Italian.
He's eventually going to be a baby face because of this, like you said, kind of by proxy.
Yeah, this is totally gonna. So then Luther scoops her up. She goes, just remember, chin up, tits out, and line. And Mariah goes, watch out for the shoe. She cold stares her and says, that's what I say. Stop stepping on my lines, even though she just asked for the line. She goes off. Somewhere in the middle of that segment, she had given Mariah a piece of chocolate to keep her quiet. It was so funny. Anywho.
Wow.
Sammy Guevara defeated Ricky Starks with a super kick. And this is a prelude to a match that's going to happen Saturday on Battle of the Belts 9, where Sammy Guevara and Chris Jericho, Les Sex Gods, will take on Ricky Starks and Big Bill for the AEW World Tag Team titles. After the match, Big Bill and Ricky take it to Guevara until Jericho comes in with Floyd the Bat for the save.
He named his bat now?
Oh, it's been Floyd the Bat for a long-ass time.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Ever since the Appreciation Society started, I think he had it called Floyd.
I have never, ever heard this thing called Floyd until right now.
He does it very casually, you know, quickly. It's like he doesn't do any theatrics about it being called Floyd. It's just
right. It's not like he has conversations with the bat. It's not a moppy situation.
Well, no, but I mean, like, how many times has he grabbed this bat in TV appearances and in matches and stuff? And not once have you even heard the commentary team call it Floyd. Like, what? I've missed this entire thing.
Next, we had the 8 women's tag, which was basically a vehicle to get Anna Jay over, which is the other person that Brody had determined was his protege and would take under his wing. As the babyface team won yet again, Thunder Rosa, Chris Statlander, Willow Nightingale, and Anna Jay defeated Julia Hart, Sky Blue, Saraya, and Ruby Soho.
So these multi-man tag matches that they had, these 8-person tag matches, you said they were Brody tributes?
Basically. I mean, they were kind of mixing Brody shirt on, and Anna Jay had a Brody shirt on.
Okay, because they were kind of mixing babyface and heels on each side. So I was kind of curious why they were doing that.
The men's match was straight up. Those were all faces and all heels. The women were a little, Anna Jay's kind of been in a gray area since the dissolution of the JAS. Mm-hmm. So I guess this has been her slow burn back to babyface, but Thunder, Chris, and Willow are all faces, and Julia, Sky, Saraya, and Ruby are all heels. So just Anna was the only gray area. All right, next, Roderick Strong defeated Brian Keith. And, you know, Brian Keith, I had not heard of until the World's End Battle Royal. And now he's on my TV all the time. So I don't know where that came from, but
I think he'd been in Ring of Honor. But naturally, I hear the name Brian Keith, I think of Hardcastle and McCormick, which if you get that reference, you're really old. But I'm sure there's a gazillion people in the world named Brian Keith. So,
right. Afterwards, promo from Adam Cole, pretty much the same stuff he said last week. Roderick's going after the international title. The Kingdom are already the Ring of Honor tag champs. I guess they don't want to reach any higher than that. Cool. And then he said, we, meaning him and Wardlow, are going after the AEW world title. And why they turned Wardlow heel to put him in another heel faction just to plant the seeds to turn him babyface again. They're screwing around with this guy so much. He would be the first big guy I think should go to WWE because they know how to book their big guys. Tony has no fucking clue because he keeps doing the same thing over and over and over again. And when he's not doing the same thing over and over again, Wardlow's off TV for 6 months at a time. So this is not going to end well for him. I'm not invested in him at all because I know where it's going. I know how it's going to end, and I'm still not going to give a shit. So there's that.
Yep. You're not wrong.
Backstage again with Renee. She's got to be the hardest working person on these TV shows, I swear to God. Renee backstage with Deonna Purrazzo, and she is saying that she is going to have her debut this Saturday at Collision. Red Velvet walks in and says, "Saturday at Collision, huh? Well, why don't you take me on and we'll mix it up," as she likes to say. And Deonna had one of the best subtle lines of the night when Red Velvet did that mixing motion that she likes to do. Deonna goes, "Oh, is that your mixing arm?" And Red's like, yeah. And Deonna's like, "Good to know." And she walks off because of Deonna's submission move, works the arm. So I was like, that was so subtle. It was perfect.
Nice.
And then we had the main event, which was a Texas Tornado tag match between Darby Allin and Sting, facing off against Powerhouse Hobbs and Konosuke Takeshita. The match ends, well, first of all, before I get to the end, they battle up to the stage area, and Darby climbs up the stairs where the seats, some seats are, and he goes higher and higher till he's at even with the top of the main Tron for the entrances, and does a coffin drop from that high up onto Takeshita, and that was not the finish of the match.
Wow.
So the finish of the match comes when Powerhouse Hobbs has Sting up in the power slam position on his shoulder. He decides to walk the length, or the width, I should say, of the seating area to the right of the ring, and he's going to power slam him through some tables that were pre-set up, two tables side by side. As he's walking across, Sting shimmies off. They battle a little bit closer to the tables, and the end comes when Sting cinches up Hobbs in the setup for the Scorpion Death Drop, and he drops Hobbs through what was supposed to be through two tables on the floor, only goes through one table, and their momentum basically just pushes the second table out of the way. But it looked a hell of a lot more dangerous than I just described it. So Sting at 62 on his retirement tour, his career comes to an end in 2 months, is still taking ridiculous bumps that are not even necessary.
I was afraid that he hurt himself based on the fallout, because it seemed like he needed help getting in the ring, or maybe he was just selling. I don't know, but I was concerned.
I guess he wants to go out with a bang, right? He's like, I got a few matches left. I'm going to do stuff that I don't do and have fun, maybe, while almost brutalizing myself.
Sting goes flying off these things at will. Meanwhile, earlier in the match, Ric Flair tried to get in the ring, and it looks like he can barely move anywhere without a walker. And supposedly he's begging for more physicality spots. And I'm like, Rick, for the love of God, stand on the outside, drink your energy drinks, and stop. Anyway, the show wraps up when Shivani's in the ring, shocker, and asks Sting who his final match will be against at Revolution. But before he can answer, the music plays and we have the return of the Young Bucks. Although they look wildly ridiculous with French-looking mustaches, and people have been calling them the Mature Bucks because of how ridiculous they look. And it's been hinted and subsequently confirmed that this was the plan all along once Sting approved it, that the match in March will be the Young Bucks versus Sting and Darby Allin as his final match. Not my preference, but who am I?
Yeah, that does seem a little odd because I would have thought Sting's last match would have been against Darby. So I'm not really sure the history that the Bucks and Sting would have unless the Bucks just really want to have a match with him.
Yeah, I always thought he'd go out with, doesn't necessarily like an epic match, but, you know, against somebody that he maybe has some history with. And, you know, Darby would certainly fit that. But it's like, okay, here we go.
I just don't want it to be the match ends and our reaction is, so that happened. Nor do I want Sting to kill himself on the way out.
Now you've just opened the door, Seth. Or sorry, Josh.
Pandora's box.
Yep.
Damn you. All right. Well, that was Dynamite. Any final thoughts?
Well, it was a good show top to bottom. I mean, there was a lot of wrestling. There really wasn't that terribly much plot development. But if you like wrestling and your wrestling shows, I think you probably like this show. So, yeah, nothing really to complain about.
Not much for me other than Floyd.
Yeah, I mean, it was a good show, even though I fast forwarded through a lot of it. I'm not invested in a lot of the people that were on this show, or I'm frustrated with the current storyline. I will always watch Samoa Joe cut a promo. The Mariah May, Toni Storm thing is Trish and Mickie James modernized with the ironic twist of a 1930s starlet.
Wrong company.
Well, yeah, but I'm saying they're drawing from history.
Yeah.
So, I mean, this is all going to end with Mariah turning on Tony, and Tony will be the babyface, and Mariah will be the jilted heel. We'll have to see how long it takes to get there. I'm not sure I want to see Jay White in a super faction that gets owned by the United Kingdom. I think that's a bit of a downgrade for him, but we'll see where this goes. Maybe this just ends up being a feud for the trios titles between Bullet Club Gold and the Acclaimed. So the enemy of my enemy is my friend does not always have to be that way. Let's hope for some creativity. Thank you for listening, downloading, and subscribing, and we will talk to you next time. Thank you for listening to this episode. You can subscribe to the Wrestling Brethren podcast on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcast fix to hear the latest discussion from the Wrestling Brethren. Visit the mothership, if you will, at twbpodcast.com, the online home of the Wrestling Brethren podcast. Let us know your thoughts, questions, and comments on Twitter/X at TWBPShow, on Facebook at facebook.com/behindthesquaredcircle, and on Instagram at The Wrestling Brethren. You can follow Jarrett on Twitter/X at TheBaconRev. You can follow Seth at Lord Xandrax, and you can follow Josh at SouthpawJosh. Thank you again for listening, and we will talk to you soon with more from the Wrestling Brethren.